knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
My bright spot is we are home.
Oh, yeah.
We are off the road. You know, the road dog lifestyle is a little bit rough.
I mean, old. I feel old.
I bet you do.
Oh, yeah.
For some context for listeners, we got back, and when did we get back?
Thursday, when we got back. I think we got back Thursday, but we also went back in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who knows? That would have been like Friday morning for us.
Right.
Deep Friday morning.
Deep Friday morning. Yes.
Shifts. Yeah. And we're recording this here on Sunday. And unfortunately for you, you've had a real rough go.
Yeah. It's been a disaster. It has been really, really bad.
Whereas I have been smooth sailing through this jet lag.
I mean, it's amazing.
Non-existent jet lag coming back.
Amazing.
I don't know if it was because of like sprinkling in some sleep on the plane or muscling through and like going to bed later.
Yeah.
On that Friday when we got back.
Yeah.
Or Thursday.
Yeah,
whatever
day
that would have been. I don't know what it is, but I'm very fortunate, and I'm sorry for you. I feel bad for you.
I mean, honestly, the way I feel about it right now is, because your sleep schedule has often been a nightmare.
Yeah.
I feel like that flight home was essentially an El Kabong that re-scrambled your bait. You got hit with a frying pan.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm better now.
I think it's still too early to say for sure.
Sure.
Because it's only been a few days. But yeah, that, if that's the case, I'm not mad at it. if that coconut fell on my head and fixed my amnesia.
It is, yeah. I mean, if that works out, I'm happy for you.
Yeah. So, you know, overall, great trip. A lot of fun.
Fantastic.
Great to meet so many wonks out there in the wild.
Could not be happier.
The show in Glasgow, such a great time.
Amazing.
QED, a lot of fun.
Tons.
And then at Amersham Arms in London.
Closing it out in London was the right move.
Yeah, those two nights were fantastic.
Yep.
The staff at Amersham Arms could not have been more helpful.
Oh, great.
And just wonderful. I like, too, that we, you know, we had, in Glasgow, we had a theater.
Yep.
That we were in.
Yep.
That was a repurposed church.
Yep.
And that had a nice vibe to it in some ways. It felt like big time.
It felt a little bit like we're not supposed to be doing a theater.
Right. There was like amphitheater seating
kind of went up
in the back.
Totally.
And like, it felt a little bit like we were, like we shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
And then we go to QED, and you know, my talk was in the main ballroom.
Fantastic, went great.
Oh, thank you.
Went great. People fucking loved it.
But leaving that aside, when we did our podcast, it was in a conference room.
Yeah,
and so that had an interesting vibe that was different.
Right,
and then
I felt like we didn't belong there, but for a very different reason. Right.
It was tough to feel at all like anyone belonged to that conference room.
It's a tough spot for a show, you know?
Yeah. It's no one's fault at the conference or anything.
No.
It's just like, this is a strange setup.
Yeah.
I feel like we had those mics, too, that felt like you were at the UN.
Should be leaning in
and answering
totally.
A question.
Yep.
But then with the Amersham Arms, that was like a bar. It was low ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
It felt right in terms of like, this is the environment where if this show is done live, this is kind of how it feels like it should be.
Yeah.
And so that's wonderful. I appreciated, like you said, closing it out there was the right way to go.
It felt like that, you know, we both run shows for comedy, for making people laugh, we've both been around people who run shows that aren't for funniness, or they're music shows, or any number of different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So both of us have a kind of ideal way of this is how things should go, how they should look, all right. of that stuff. Amersham Arms was about as close to somebody else doing it right as I've seen in a long time.
But what's so fun is so much of that seemed like almost accidental.
Yeah, totally.
It, yep. it just was that the venue and the space was great.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't like there was putting on airs. I mean,
nope.
probably putting more seats out than they usually do.
A lot more, yeah.
But other than that, just had a, had it. Had
yep.
it.
Yep, it was great.
So, other little things about the trip,
yep.
I guess. Glasgow, gorgeous city. I wish we had a little more time to spend there because
yep.
There's a lot of cool. I just can't get over the river running through the west end of the city.
Like, yeah,
just,
yeah, 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 yeah.
I thought that was so cool. I would have liked to fuck around in the creek
yeah.
Bed a little bit. But then, big thing we should probably address. So we're at QED.
We could have just moved past it.
I feel like the listeners deserve, because I heard some chatter about this, and
oh,
so I feel
chatter?
Like we should address this.
Okay, we must.
So we were at QED, and one of the nights there,
yeah.
there was a gala dinner.
Yeah,
and you and I are not gala guys.
We're not bent for galas.
No.
There's nice pants there. I feel uncomfortable around other people wearing nice pants.
If there's a pleat, I'm out.
I'm out.
Yeah. It just felt like I don't know about this.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, we made a couple friends, and we were thinking about getting dinner.
Yeah.
And so just like do that or go to a stuffy seeming gala dinner.
And we're us. So like
yeah.
the idea of even being around, like being centered around, like, you know, there's hundreds of people around me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's fine in a show in this kind of controlled environment. But at dinner, you don't know what's going on.
No.
A social situation, anything could happen.
No. And no one was really like, you need to come. You
yeah.
definitely
no,
should
totally.
Come. No
yeah.
pressure really being applied.
No.
Just sort of like, this is the thing that's happening.
Absolutely.
We saved you a seat.
Right?
Fine. So we went to dinner at a pizza place.
Yep.
And turns out later that evening we found out that we had won the Occam Award for Skeptical Activism of the Year. And that they announced that we had won.
We were not there. We were not there.
And boy, feel like a couple
big,
of assholes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is about as, you know, and even they made the joke where it is like, it's about as them as you can get that they're not here to accept this award. That's who they are. But it's also, I feel like a huge piece of shit. I
yeah.
really wish we had been there. I'm sorry.
It's on brand conceptually.
Sure.
But in the real world, if someone were going out of their way to, you know,
yeah.
award us something, I would suck it up and deal with the
totally.
Discomfort that I have and be gracious about it.
100%.
If I'd had the awareness. Thank you to them for the award.
I mean,
appreciate it. It's on the wall now.
Right. I feel like ultimately, you know, it would be our reputation, you know, to be like awkward about it and not go to the gala.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what people don't understand is truly our reputation is that the idea of receiving an award never once entered my mind.
No.
Never.
No.
Not once.
There was the process of hearing the news that we'd won the award was a multi-stage.
Oh, it was. It's yeah.
There's what?
What? Mm-hmm. What? What?
But appreciated.
Very much so.
And yeah, sorry about that.
It is
folks.
It is, you know, I mean it's a precedent now though that it's possible for us to, you know, cuz it wasn't even like we had that thought of like wouldn't it be funny
mm-hmm.
if they or like
no.
maybe they would or like we could be in the running or mm-hmm. like any of those, nothing along those lines.
Nope.
The idea of an award simply did not exist.
Nope.
Yeah.
It just was a situation where a gala dinner seems a little stuffy. And I don't know what's on the menu. I'm not sure if I'm going to like anything.
I'm not that hungry.
It could be like some high-end
yeah.
classy food. I just
totally.
Want a hot dog.
I mean, we're also not high-end classy food people. Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're just not meant for this world, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all in all, delightful.
Amazing.
Wouldn't trade it for the world the
Absolutely
entire trip.
Not.
And hope to be able to do something like it again, but a bit down the road.
For sure. For sure.
Because we're tired.
This will require some recovery time.
So I'm going to get to your bright spot here in a second, but I just want to say just on the piggybacking on this.
Sure.
We did record the shows.
Yeah.
Now.
Now.
there are some issues.
No.
The Glasgow show.
Yep.
They may or may not have mic'd the audience.
Let's go with they didn't or forgot to.
They may have, and maybe it just didn't record or
possible,
something.
Possible.
We have a recording of the Glasgow show,
yeah,
which was great, but there is no audience sound.
No.
So we sound insane.
We sound like we are waiting for, like what, a minute? Minute and a half to
sometimes
just like say something back to each mm-hmm. other. It's insane.
Yep. So that's a challenge. Yep. I'm not sure how that's going to work out or if it'll be released. Maybe. Probably not on our main feed if we do put it out somewhere.
It will be in the Cabinet of Curiosities, I
right.
believe. Yes.
The QED one is fine, although it needs a little bit of work, the
sure.
audio. So that'll come out eventually. And then the two London ones will come out down yep. the road. Actually, not down the road, fairly soon.
Yeah. Coming up.
But I felt like it would be weird to just jump straight into those from the time we were away.
Sure.
And not be like, we're back. Hey, everything's great. Thank you for the fun times on the
right.
tour.
Right.
Here come some live episodes.
Totally.
Felt like you need a little bit of a hinge.
I mean, on the other hand, here's what I forgot. And again, this might be part of the jet lag. I was convinced that it's been about a month since we left yesterday. I was like, what day is it?
2 weeks.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I genuinely thought that we had been gone for a full month.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we're
intense.
We have a lot of consistency and
yeah.
And such.
Yeah.
And so
we gotta
like,
get back
two
to it.
Weeks can feel like a month.
Yeah. It's been so long.
Especially when you're jumping around from country to country and, you know.
Absolutely.
Podcasters on the run.
And I don't know. I mean, for us, come on. Pre-recorded episodes over plus 1 week, plus 2 weeks old? I don't know if we can handle that.
Yeah.
We're out of our minds.
Sorry about the audio on that Tucker one, too.
Yeah.
Don't know
yeah.
what happened.
I don't know.
I'll fix it. Maybe.
Maybe.
Anyway, we have other priorities.
Yes.
What's your bright spot?
My bright spot is twofold. Obviously, my first bright spot is getting to see my wife and my pups.
Sure.
Coming home and doing the whole thing. You know the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Getting the wife hug, running up, getting the wife hug.
Sure.
Then her holding them back so they get the good puppy runs.
So you're like
you get the little video of the pups going. Ah!
You're like one of those soldiers.
Totally.
At a football
game. I mean, it is not stolen valor to love your dog.
True.
But it does have the echoes of those videos, but that's why I'm also not like sharing those with.
Sure.
Yeah,
I bet that's overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah.
I meanwhile just walked into a very angry cat who
yeah.
wouldn't shut up for like a day.
I was going to say, yeah. You had to be punished.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just got unconditional beautiful love and joy. So that was great. And then the other thing that was truly great, that's my bright spot is like, as I'm thinking about the tour and returning to sanity in my own brain,
mm-hmm.
meeting the Wonks, after the shows, was so amazingly, I mean, our audience is so inclusive, so loving, so connected to each other. So many people showed up with solo tickets and left with a group of friends, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is something that I could not be more shocked and like, grateful for.
Yeah, it's a real treat to be able to facilitate that
yeah.
in some way.
And to
be a small part of it.
Yeah, and to see it in person was the amazing thing. You know, we know about it because we hear about it from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But to see somebody walk up and be like, never met this person before in my life. Hey, well, let's all get a picture together was such a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, doing stand-up, getting those after-show conversations with people, a lot of times it's an old dude trying to say a terrible word to me.
Yeah, or like, hey, let me tell you a weird secret.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah.
No.
No, I don't want to be around you, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is a wholly different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a little bit strange. I'm not entirely sure how we've fallen into this thing where we'll just say hi and talk to people for hours after the show.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened. I don't mind that it happened.
No.
But I guess my feeling is almost like appreciation and thank you to the folks for, you know, sharing things with us.
Totally. It never occurred to me not to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like the award.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It is like, hey, now I'm going to give you the next 4 hours of my life, I suppose.
Yeah. Can't hurt, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
Also, I'm going to give you credit for the whole trip, the discussion,
sure.
being part of your bright spot.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my impression from while I was on the road that Russell Brand was on InfoWars. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do an episode.
Okay.
I don't think he was.
I'm sorry, what?
I think they just talked about him on InfoWars.
I'm sorry, what?
And I'm not sure. I was scanning through the clips on Band.video, and I didn't see what... I just saw them talking a lot about him.
I mean...
And how the allegations against him are just proof that he's right.
Yeah.
And it's an attack.
Yeah.
A baseless attack.
Of course. Naturally.
I certainly don't put it above Russell Brand to have been on InfoWars.
Sure.
And maybe he was, and I just didn't find the video.
It seems like that would be pretty front and center on their coverage. If they had Russell Brand on, mm-hmm. they would be like, here's the video with Russell Brand.
You and know? Part of the time that we were away, Alex was also on vacation. And
okay.
so there wouldn't have been time. And I don't think Russell Brand's slumming it with Harrison Smith.
Mm, not yet.
So anyway, we have September 29th, 2023. Because I was poking around and I ended up watching this episode and I thought, well, this is fucked up.
That sounds right.
Can't resist the urge to tell you all about it.
Back at it.
But first, Jordan, before we get into this, let's say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, Anne of Beeves. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
I think that's a repeat name.
Oh.
I remember the Beeves.
Hmm.
I'm not sure. But anyway, you got two, Anne. Next. Yeah, he's mad. He's Matter Eater Lad. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
That was supposed to have an exclamation point at the end instead of a question mark.
Mm.
Next, Mike Down for this. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Next, a friend of mine was on the challenge 10 years ago and does not remember it fondly. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Now, see, what I take away from that is that this person's friend was a woman. Because
any of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because as I've described the challenge, it is essentially dudes being assholes and women being miserable.
Yep.
But bad show.
Bad show.
Bad show.
Bad.
Shouldn't bring it up as much as I do.
Can't not.
And also, Julia, you are now policy wonk from Old Man House Phone. Thank you so much. You are now policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a technocrat in the mix, so thank you so much to Happy Birthday, Kyle. You're not 40. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent. He's a loser little titty baby. I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
So, Jordan, when I was going through, trying to poke around and see this Russell Brand video, see what else is going on over at InfoWars HQ.
Sure.
One of the reasons that I decided we should cover this episode is because I think Alex is trying. There is a sense of him having a point that he wants to get to, and he tries. And that kind of got me excited, you know, coming back from the trip.
Yeah.
Hearing him seemingly put some effort in.
Mm.
And then it ends ludicrously.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
It's lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
In some ways.
I'm looking at you skeptically.
Yeah.
It is perhaps one of the most skeptical looks I can give to you because Alex trying is one of the most impossible things I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, even when he does try, it doesn't go well.
Wow.
But we'll see how this all plays out. We're going to begin here with Alex announcing that there is a major story that is hidden in plain view.
Okay.
There's been a big story hiding in plain view that I talked about many years ago because it's part of the larger UN replacement migration plan, but I hadn't talked about it in a long time. And Scott Bronson, our lead producer on the show, came in this morning with a big stack of news and made the point to me and said, I think this is what's going on. And I said, no, I agree with you. That is what's going on. So I had them print some more articles and get some more videos ready. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to cover a massive story. How are they going to get foreign troops here to confiscate the guns?
That is a good question.
That isn't just some rumor. That's been proposed under State Department Memorandum 7277.
It hasn't.
And others since the 60s. But how are they going to do it? With the illegal aliens, ladies and gentlemen. And
wow.
Happening. And it ties into the national draft. The Pentagon admits they're getting ready, and the Democrats are promoting.
They're not. So there's an interesting level of, you can see the fingerprints of trying to appear prepared.
Right.
Here.
Right.
Scott Bronson coming in with a bunch of this bullshit.
He said, here's what's going on. And I was like, that is what's going on.
Let's do this.
Gotcha.
And so then Alex gets some more articles and you can see him taking these pieces that he's going to try and connect together into like a harmonious, like overarching narrative.
Yeah, no, I'm seeing it, and it almost seems as though I can follow somewhat of the plan that he is lying
about. That's the difference.
Exactly.
Yes.
No, it does feel like, okay, foreign troops need to get into the...
Bingo.
So we disguise them as immigrants coming through either Mexico or Canada, goes up there, and then somehow, I don't know how it gets to the draft, but right. I'm kind of interested.
Right, but you can see the connective tissue, the A to B to C to
yes.
D. Like, there is that.
Totally.
It is so rare.
It is shocking. It is shocking the level of, I mean.
I worry that this is Scott Bronson's doing.
It doesn't feel like, it feels like this is something that a guy who had nothing would say, that is what's going on too. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
This does not have the hallmarks of Alex's normal content.
Absolutely not.
So he touches on a news story, a recent news story, and I have some thoughts.
Okay.
And it is coming up here in just 30 minutes from now or 25 minutes from now. In fact, guys, I gave you yesterday's stack back this morning when I got here. Will you re-pull me the big studies and the reports out of Bloomberg on corporate hiring, and 94% of all new hires the last 2 years being non-white? I'm going to explain the dichotomy and the social credit score, universal basic income game plan that ties into this as well. That's why a lot of times I should cover stories more often, but I have this tendency to want to give you a full spectrum analysis. So as I think about the story I want to break down, I don't just give you some one-dimensional or two-dimensional or three-dimensional layout. I give you their documents, their statements, their master plan, where they want to go, where they're at, how it's going to unfold. This couldn't be a bigger subject. Pull the stack for me. Pull that out of the stacks about an inch thick, and we will do that at the bottom of the hour. This is big, big, big.
It's big.
It's big.
He said it three times.
It's big.
It's big. So when Alex says that he does full spectrum analysis, or however he chooses to phrase it that day, what you should really hear is him saying that he's too lazy to read any actual articles or studies, so when he covers one, he needs to free associate and connect it to anything else he can think of so the audience doesn't catch on to the shallowness of the information that he's bringing to the table. If he had a mastery of the subject he's talking about, there would be no need to go off on absurd tangents and rant about whatever else comes to his mind, because Alex would be able to discuss this one news story in depth in such a way that he could illustrate to the audience how it connects to other subjects that he covers. That's what people do when they know what they're talking about.
True.
He wouldn't need to do this entire song and dance because his point could be clearly made through the lens of a single story if he wanted to. This Bloomberg story he's referencing here is a pretty good case in point. The headline is about how 94% of new hires were non-white applicants between 2020 and 2021 for the data reviewed by Bloomberg.
Yes.
So naturally, Alex is going to do what he calls full spectrum analysis on the story.
Sure.
That means he didn't read the story, but it makes him feel like white people are being replaced and cast out of society. So he's going to rant about other stories that make him feel that way. It's the full spectrum of white victimhood that he's going to analyze, but it doesn't actually involve the analysis of the story itself or the article. For my money, if you're going to do full spectrum analysis on a story, you need to analyze that story itself first so you know what you're talking about. And when you're connecting it to all the other stuff within the spectrum, that helps it make sense. All we know from Alex's coverage is that 94% of these new hires have been non-white people, but what else can you learn from reading the Bloomberg article? It should come as no surprise that there's a hell of a lot that Alex is leaving out.
Okay. Now, when you say full spectrum analysis, have you considered instead loading a shotgun with spaghetti and then firing it at the nearest person and then throwing a smoke bomb and running away?
Infowar. Information war.
That kind of sounds right to me.
Spaghetti information.
I would rather, I think that's a more entertaining way to learn the news, is to be covered in blasted spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cook the spaghetti, though, first, right?
Because
otherwise that could really hurt.
That could really hurt you. I mean, listen, If you're not making it from scratch, I don't know what you're doing here.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So the first thing to note about this article is that it's just a glimpse at data from 88 companies on the S&P 100 list, representing 323,094 new jobs that were created during the year 2020 to 2021. For some context, the U.S. added 6.4 million jobs in 2021. So while whatever data or trends we can pull from this Bloomberg set is interesting, and it represents behaviors of many of the larger companies in the U.S., it still doesn't depict the full picture of employment in the United States. The S&P 100 represents the large companies that Alex would describe as globalists.
Sure.
These are folks like Apple, Amazon, Disney, BlackRock, Comcast, McDonald's, these sorts of companies. Big-ass companies that have a lot of different sorts of employment underneath their company umbrellas. That context is actually really important because if you read on in the article, you find that though 94% of the new hires for these newly created jobs were non-white applicants, this still leaves these companies in a very white-centric place. From the article, quote, "Even such big one-time gains and losses represent a relatively small slice of the full picture. The share of executive, managerial, and professional roles held by people of color increased by about 2 percentage points compared with 2020. That still leaves most companies in our data set lopsided, with white people holding disproportionate shares of high-paying jobs at S&P 100 companies."
Yeah, that sounds right.
In the article, you find that even with all these things factored in, 74% of executive positions at these companies are held by white people, as well as 63% of managerial positions. The bulk of these new positions that were created were in the lower paid, less senior positions.
Great.
That doesn't mean that this stat of the in the article that it's based on is meaningless,
sure,
but it does mean that it's easy to get the wrong idea about it if you just skim and look at the number.
It does feel like if I was one of these companies wanting to show off how cool I am,
we're going to get to this,
I would plant one of these articles that has chosen very specific numbers to reflect.
This is a point of
it. That might be there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Weird.
You're picking up
weird
on some important context.
Yeah.
So there's another aspect here that we need to take into consideration, which is that Bloomberg came to this data set by reviewing EEOC filings made by these companies. Companies with more than 100 employees are required to send in this information, which Bloomberg reviewed, and then they came up with their numbers and their figures. But this can only capture so much information. In this case, like these hires made for new positions. This isn't the full picture of employment at any of these companies, which is why you see this in the section about their methodology. Quote, "There are several ways a company can change the demographics of its workforce. For example, when a white person leaves, their position could be filled by a person of color, or a company might opt to hire a person of color for an entirely new role. However, the EEO-1 form doesn't offer data on turnover rates or the volume of new recruits, the kind of detailed insights needed to track these internal shifts."
Right.
This analysis is fairly limited, and more than anything, it's sold kind of as corporate propaganda.
Sure seems like it.
As you were saying.
Yeah.
As reflected in the headline, quote, "Corporate America promised to hire a lot more people
of
color."
Don't you dare.
It actually
did. Don't you dare finish that sentence. Dare finish that sentence, sir.
The angle of the reporting is more or less a puff piece for these giant companies, which is a little shady. We know nothing about the exact nature of the jobs that were created, and from the information that's available to Bloomberg, we don't even know if these jobs still exist and if they're filled by the same people. There are a lot of unanswerable questions that this coverage can't cover, and at the end of the day, I feel like an article like this is way more valuable to a white identity extremist like Alex than anybody else.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe to these companies themselves.
I suppose.
The optics of this headline work perfectly for Alex, so long as he doesn't actually get into the article, because if he did, he'd have to explain to the audience that these hires did very little to move the needle in terms of changing overwhelmingly white corporate governance at these companies, and that the data behind the article only captures about 5% of the jobs that were created in 2021.
Yeah.
If you shrink the spectrum of your analysis to just the headline and some feelings that they evoke in you, you get the kind of coverage that Alex is going to engage in. But it's meaningless. And the only real truth you can find involves Alex's intense feelings of white victimhood and how much he wants the audience to feel those things too.
Yeah.
Now, to your point, though, about the corporate propaganda aspect, the thing that I find really interesting is if we approach this coverage from a critical eye, the way that you might when you're saying, hey, this is a puff piece.
Sure.
For businesses.
Sure.
Alex is distracting the audience from being able to recognize that
right
with racism.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
I mean, that's how it goes. That's how it's been since the jump.
Right.
That's the whole idea.
But it is interesting to see such an overt example of Alex engaging in that.
Yeah, I mean, it is very much that idea of, as long as you can convince the poorest white man they're better than a non-white person, then you can rule this whole fucking country, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
And Alex is facilitating
And that. Alex is right there. He's trying to do that. Mm-hmm. He is part of that, you know. It is not controlled opposition. It's not opposition. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that fucking... any time they're like, from this very, very specific period, these very, very specific requirements for this study, these very, very specific numbers that we're using to reflect what's going on, you're like, okay, so what you're saying is if you spread it out from, say, 2000 to 2020, it'd be mainly white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Sure. And, I mean, like, obviously, you can't make too many conclusions because later data isn't available yet. And so who knows exactly what that data would reflect.
Right.
And it is possible that diverse hiring practices have continued, maybe not to that extent, but maybe that is the case. I don't know. But either way, I don't think that this headline and article is necessarily capturing a full picture of what the actual the circumstances are.
No.
And I mean, you even see it in the methodology. They don't know anything about like people who got promoted.
Yeah.
Like none of this stuff is in any way captured by this data. And I don't know.
People had contracts even that would protect their jobs, you know? Like, oh, this short period of time, we fired everybody after that.
I mean, you know? That's a pessimistic view, but
obviously,
you don't know that it's not the case.
Exactly.
Based on the information they have at their disposal.
Yeah.
So Alex is going to have an interesting guest on in the third hour.
Oh, okay.
And we're not going to listen to any of him.
Hey!
In the third hour, we're joined by a British independent, very successful journalist who was arrested last week and taken to jail. But he says he's not going to back down. He broke the SS German officer, part of the key unit that carried out the extermination of Jews and others in Ukraine. That's where the real Holocaust stuff did go on.
Wait, what?
He exposed the standing ovation. He exposed who he was. They arrested him just a day later in the UK. He'll be joining us. I could have Owen Schroyer on to talk about it, our host, but he's got to get ready to report to prison here very soon, so he's not here. He's visiting family. See how crazy it is?
Man, that's going to be a real problem for their depth chart in terms of, like, who's going to fill in. You got no talent to fill that in.
I mean, are they going to try and hire somebody?
I think that Harrison Smith would take over the war room, and then some other ding-dong would fill in on his show because the stakes are lower.
Right.
Neither of them have good audiences, but Owens is more important than Harrison's.
Yeah.
And Harrison is more senior, so you move him up, and then you get just maybe fill in guest hosts for the American Journal.
Ooh.
Because no one really cares about that.
If I'm running a baseball team, how I do it.
Get Patrick Howley in there to fill in on the American Journal.
Yeah.
Say some Nazi shit.
Do your community service.
Right. That's the...
Just do your community service, man.
Now. That's really what Owen's situation is. So, anyway. We got this allegedly successful UK journalist, but Alex is off about a few things.
Sure.
So, this is a guy named Warren Thornton, and he's not really a successful journalist. He's a weirdo pro-Putin commentator who has a YouTube channel called The Real Truth, where his videos get upwards of 400 views. Thornton was on the show today here because Alex has decided that he was the first person to report that Yaroslav Hunka was a Nazi. I don't know if you followed any of this.
Was this the Canadian Parliament?
Yes.
Where they all gave a standing ovation to a Nazi because nobody had any fucking clue it was a Nazi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the speaker had invited him because he was a notable Ukrainian-Canadian.
Right.
And then the speaker had to step down.
Totally.
Because it's a whole mess.
How am I supposed to know? I didn't think Nazis were still allowed into this country. How am I supposed to know he's there?
It's an unnecessary mistake to make, for
hugely
sure.
Hugely unnecessary.
So I'm not going to hand wave away Hunka's wartime activities, though he did join the 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS at 18, which I only bring up to say that he was probably a pretty fucking bad person, but he wasn't running the show. Sure. Like Alex is trying to imply.
Right.
That's the only thing that I would give pushback on. It's not like he's in charge of these things.
Sure.
He's an 18-year-old recruit who was doing some awful shit.
Yeah.
And I don't care to defend him any further. From everything I can tell, it was not this Thornton fellow who took issue with Hunko being given a standing ovation at the event first, primarily. It was Jewish organizations like the Simon Wiesenthal Center.
Yeah, that does make sense.
I have a very strong suspicion that the actual advocacy groups that brought attention to this are being ignored because the narrative on Alex's show is that Jewish groups like the Wiesenthal Center actually support Nazis.
Right.
So it wouldn't make sense for them to call this out.
Right.
To dodge that inconvenience, it's easy enough to give credit to this no-name Russophile YouTuber. I was able to find an article about Thornton's alleged arrest on David Icke's website, but pretty much nowhere else. Apparently, he was recording an episode of his web show on the night of September 24th, and in the middle of it, the police showed up and he disappeared. But the article specifically says that he disappeared, quote, 20 minutes before the show ended, because there was another host who was interviewing somebody else. I can't find this video. It's not on his YouTube channel. And on the 24th, he was just retweeting transphobic memes and posts about how you should lose government assistance if you're caught looting.
Sure.
So that's what's going on when this is supposed to have been happening.
Right.
Also, there's some anti-vax memes and stuff about protecting the children.
I could have scheduled those.
In the subsequent days, there's tweets whining about Hunter Biden, plugs for his Patreon, and all sorts of anti-Ukraine, pro-Russia stuff. No mention of the police or him being arrested, though, and it hardly seems like there would have been any time when he wasn't posting on social media, so it's hard to imagine he was ever in a cell.
Wait, he's coming onto the show to talk about it, his time being arrested, though, right?
No, mostly to talk about Hunka and how Trudeau knew that he was a Nazi and
all
this
stuff. Oh, my God.
That's
okay.
Basically what,
fine.
The arrest is just like giving him credibility.
Right. That's just dressing. Set deck. Gotcha.
So the article on David Icke's website says that there was a Twitter video that was later taken down, but then it describes another video that's still there where Thornton blows hard about the difference between disinformation, misinformation, and malinformation.
Oh, my God.
He's being accused of spreading malinformation.
Oh, my God.
I don't necessarily believe this story that he's telling about being arrested, primarily because plenty of people were pointing out Hunka's past, and there's no reason that anyone would silence him by, like, you'd feel the need to silence him by arresting him.
Yeah.
That's the kind of story that shithead online liars like to tell about themselves in order to make their content seem more dangerous to the power structure. So until I'm shown otherwise, that's what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah.
Days afterward, on the 27th, there was a video posted on Rumble, which was titled, quote, Warren Thornton Arrested. It has no evidence of an arrest in it, and Warren doesn't even claim that he was arrested.
Interesting.
At most, he says he was questioned over spreading malinformation, which Warren characterizes as taking true things that are supposed to be private and making them public. He means that in terms of, like, government secrets and stuff like that, but
sure.
When people are accused of spreading malinformation, it usually means that they're doxing or swatting people or spreading revenge porn. It can also involve taking a kernel of truth and exaggerating it out to the point where it's no longer true. And I could maybe see the police in the UK visiting someone if it was a situation where the thing that was being lied about was important or dangerous enough. I'm not sure. Maybe.
I don't know.
This weirdo talking about a Canadian House of Commons incident doesn't seem to achieve that level of seriousness, though. I just don't believe it.
Is there like extradition for talking shit about Canadian Parliament?
Not for that, no.
Mm, okay.
So interestingly, Thornton is a regular guest on a Rumble channel called The Charlie Ward Show. You may recognize that name, Charlie Ward, because he's a figure who Kerry Cassidy looks up to quite a bit.
Great.
Because he's a QAnon weirdo.
Great.
Intermixed with Warren Thornton's appearances, you'll find interviews with someone called the King of Q Drops, a guy named SG Anon, and someone who goes by Baby Trump. So yeah, he's in that crowd.
I am a grumpy old man. I know this, but I hated it when gamer tags just started being an acceptable way to just refer to people.
Oh, come on.
I'm a grumpy old man. What am I supposed to say?
Baby Trump.
That's what it is.
So this intensely pro-Russia commentator who hangs out on QAnon Rumble shows and appears to be at least exaggerating talking to the police in order to give himself the claim to fame is going to talk to Alex pretty much the entire third hour, and it's fucking boring.
Yeah.
Just wall-to-wall Russia is great talk and insistences that Justin Trudeau and Zelensky both knew that Hunka was in the SS as a child, or as a youth, excuse me, because they were trying to signal to their Nazi brethren worldwide by giving him a standing ovation.
What?
That's the conspiracy that they're selling.
Okay.
One thing I want to point out, and that's what you noticed there, is that Alex said that the Ukraine is where, quote, the real Holocaust stuff went on.
Yeah.
Which I find to be problematic phrasing.
Big issues.
That really leads you to believe that Alex thinks that other, quote, Holocaust stuff didn't go on elsewhere. And if, you know, if it appears that it did, it might have been fake. Does he not think that the extermination of Jews in Poland was real? Does he not think that Auschwitz was real? Like, what about the Gross Rosen complex in occupied Czechoslovakia and Poland? Probably not real to Alex, I guess. Dachau and Buchenwald were both in Germany proper, so that was probably fake shit. You can discuss the reality that the occupied Ukrainian government absolutely carried out a genocide of Jewish Ukrainians during World War II without trying to minimize the things that happened elsewhere. Alex does need to do that, though, because most of his audience doesn't really believe the Holocaust happened, but they need that anger toward Nazis so they can direct it towards Ukraine in order to support Russia.
Yeah.
Because it serves the interests of carrying water for Russia and Putin in the current invasion of Ukraine, Alex is trying to selectively evoke the Ukrainian aspect of the Holocaust while trying to be careful not to go too far and anger the Holocaust denialist contingent in his audience,
yeah,
which is fucked up.
That should be an impossible needle to thread. Now, have you tried loading a shotgun with spaghetti? All right.
Feels similar.
They just fire it and smoke bomb, baby!
So this dynamic that Alex is carrying out is really interesting, and he should be ashamed of himself,
yeah,
quite frankly, for playing games like this. He's using the Holocaust as a prop for this bullshit game, and also Warren Thornton sucks, and I'm not going to... There's one funny moment, though.
What?
They're talking about the misinterpretation of the agreement not to spread NATO any further.
Okay.
You know, the Gorbachev man.
Sure.
James Baker.
Yeah.
And Alex says, I've had the guy on who was there. And obviously talking about Pechenik.
Yeah.
He's obviously talking about Pechenik.
100%.
It's so awesome.
It has to be.
Yeah. He won't talk to Pechenik anymore. And the two of that, he's a PSYOP guy. Yeah, he's up to no good. But I'm still going to evoke him whenever I want to brag about shit.
Hey, listen.
But I'm never going to be specific.
A resume is a resume even if you don't like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
A resume is not a resume when you're making it up.
Well, there's definitely that.
So there was another bit of news that happened, which is one of the reasons also that I felt like we needed to do this episode,
mm-hmm,
and that is that Dianne Feinstein passed away.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Alex decides to deal with this in the only way he knows how, which is an attempt at satire.
Oh, no.
And, boy.
Oh, no.
This is, when I said he was trying, this is trying.
Well, corrupt empires come and go. Corrupt leaders come and go. But God gives us all an expiration date. And the Skeksis-like leaders of the New World Order can cling to life. But the Grim Reaper, the Angel of Death, comes for us all. And then we face the judgment before our Creator. Dianne Feinstein has made the jump into hyperspace.
What?
She was already basically a living dead creature propped up by drugs. And she voted yesterday, though they're looking at the timestamp. Looks like she was dead already. A puppet wheeled around by Pelosi's daughter, one of the producers of January 6th.
I'm sorry?
Literal film producer. And I thought of this early this morning and called one of our writers and said, hey, Sea of the Babylon Bee's done this. We're not in competition with them. They're great folks, but I bet they haven't. Let's come up with a headline, Dianne Feinstein to stay in office after death. And we beat them by about an hour. They have a similar satire story.
Oh, my God.
But Senator Dianne Feinstein dead at 90. Here's the InfoWars headline by Ben Warren. Senate changes rule so Dianne Feinstein can stay in office while dead.
Y'all got to
Senator Dianne Feinstein
shit.
Will continue to serve in office even after shuffling off her mortal coil, thanks to a new power play from the Democratic Party. Just days after majority leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat New York, ended the chamber's dress code so Senator John Fetterman could dress like an insane ogre. The top Democrat decided to up the ante while adhering to the party's mantra of inclusivity and being inclusive. It's wrong, Schumer said, to discriminate against the dead. Schumer told InfoWars in an exclusive interview.
Still going, huh? Still trying to beat that dead horse.
Necromantic decree, I am adding the massive roster of the unliving to our ranks. all the years of using the deceased as voters allowed for the smooth transitions. And it just goes on from there.
I got to say, it just goes on from there is a hell of a compliment for satire.
Oh, boy.
You know, usually satire, I think, generally, you want to get to the end of it. Because there's usually, like, this may come up later on.
Sure.
But Jonathan Swift,
yeah.
You know, with the...
famously.
The Modest Proposal.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't read to the end, you might not have... it would not have appeared to be satire.
Sure.
Because a lot of the beginning of it is about, like, the plight of the, you know, the impoverished Irish people. And
absolutely.
Like, that part wouldn't have been satirical.
Right.
I don't know. I think that... I don't know. It just seems like... It just goes on. That sucks.
I mean, at the very least... A satire you would want to keep you engaged,
right?
In some way,
there should be a twist.
There's got to be something. Or I mean, the headline's written so terribly.
Yep.
That's the how does rhythm not work? It does not enter the concept of funny to these people.
I don't
rhythm
know.
Is like the most important thing. It's insane.
It is.
Ugh.
So I also am worried slightly that I'm not confident that Alex's audience would grasp that that's not a real article.
I agree.
Like, I think that a fair amount would, probably.
All right. Okay, how about Dianne Feinstein to stay in office for another 666 years.
Did you say Dyed?
Yeah. Get it?
Oh, it's, the name. It's the, I get it.
It's
pun. The,
yeah. It's a pun. It's a headline. Come on, man.
I think that some people would be like, they did change the rules. Did you know that? You can't, when you're running a site that's full of bullshit,
yeah.
And a lot of it is pretty sensational shit,
yeah.
You can't do satire.
It's
you
not,
can't.
You have to go over the top, and you can't.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing is farcical when everything is farcical.
Yeah. Your satire is less interest, is less under the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Alex gets back to this theme, the story that's hidden in plain view.
Yeah.
That they're going to bring the migrants in.
Foreign troops.
Yeah. And so it begins him laying out his thesis with Joe Biden. And how when he was running for president.
Okay.
He said, come on, guys, flood the border.
Everybody knows Biden, when he was candidate, Biden said, when I win the election, and I will, because he knew he would by fraud, I want all the illegal aliens to immediately surge the border.
Weird thing to say.
Well, a few times he told the truth. And now 80%+ are just completely turned loose. They're bussed and flown all over the country. Hundreds of thousands of children conservatively have completely disappeared. It is mass criminal activity.
So Biden didn't tell everyone to rush the border. He was talking about refugees and asylum seekers who Trump had made rules to keep out of the country. In essence, Biden was just saying that we would go back to welcoming people who were fleeing their home countries after Trump temporarily betrayed the American value of taking people in. Biden was really clear about this. In fact, here's the clip that Alex is talking about from one of the Democratic primary debates.
I would, in fact, make sure that there is, we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
So that's what that's the lie that is being told.
That one's pretty important to us, theoretically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex knows what Biden actually said, but pretending he said something different helps him drum up white fear and xenophobia, which is the fuel that InfoWars runs on. So he's never going to admit to being full of shit about this. The rest of the stuff that Alex could not is saying he couldn't demonstrate or prove this in any way. It's foolish to think that no crime has ever happened or happens at or near the border, but this is just over-the-top nonsense. These numbers are all made up. They're pulled from other racist and xenophobic blogs and memes and other weirdo fake experts Alex has on the show.
Yeah.
It all just means nothing.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those situations where I don't even know how to... None of us can even talk about this rationally anymore. You know, like they've so dominated the language that we use to talk about the border, that kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. The immigrants are turned loose and all this stuff. And before you can even get to like, these are human beings, you're already fighting against.
Yeah.
Don't say turned loose. You know, you're already on a battlefield that you don't want to be on.
Right.
And that's dehumanizing to people because now you're arguing about the fake versions of them instead of like engaging with the reality of it. And it's
that's
such
true.
A fucking dick move. I hate them.
Yeah.
I hate them.
That's true. And
not the immigrants.
Right. People like Alex.
Yeah.
And then there's the secondary aspect to it that is just not fair abuse of language, which I guess that kind of touches on. But yeah. But I mean, in terms of definitions, because like Alex will say illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
And what he actually means is he thinks that all immigration is illegal.
Right.
And so when he's talking about refugees and people who want to apply for asylum.
Right.
He will call them illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
And that is just how his mind works, because to them or to him, they are.
And
that means nothing. The distinction is non-existent for him.
Right. And I want to like go even further with that. That is another that goes all the way up to people on the debate stage. You know, mm-hmm. that idea of we're talking about illegal immigration. And so many times you see the opposition to that being like, we support legal immigration, we don't support crime, you know, and getting into that situation. And they're misunderstanding that it has nothing to do with legal or illegal. Their existence to these people is illegal.
Yeah.
You know,
this and there is a feeling and a belief that is underneath it that is not even really reflected in the semantics.
Yeah.
But the semantics are meant to obscure and mm-hmm. make it impossible for you to talk about these things.
Totally.
With someone like Alex. It would just be impossible to have a debate or even a discussion about immigration because
right.
the terms that he would use would be foreign to
yeah.
your vernacular.
Yep.
So the globalists, they're bringing in immigrants.
Sure.
And they're going to be the force that takes your guns
okay.
and stuff.
Interesting.
But what's really behind this? Well, if you look at Europe, you look at the U.S., you look at the U.N. documents I'm going to show you here in a moment, going back to 2001, they say we're going to flood Europe with hundreds of millions. We're going to flood North America with 600 plus million by 2040. We're already well on our way there.
600.
And we're going to set them up and politically control them and basically only give them government-connected jobs so we run their lives. And then when we want to, we can activate them for political control, to vote, to be the police officers, to arrest citizens, to confiscate guns, you name it. Just like in Tiananmen Square in the late 80s, they trained in and bussed in a day 500,000 troops from 1,000 miles away that didn't even speak the same Chinese dialect to kill everybody.
So the essential thing here is Alex is just trying to drum up fear.
Yeah.
He's trying to make you distrustful and have hate for people that you suspect of being immigrants.
Yeah.
Anybody who offers comfort and aid to immigrants should be seen as probably in on this plot.
They're a foreign soldier, most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's unhealthy. It's dangerous.
I mean, you know, as far as the plan goes, you don't even really need foreign troops if you're going to, I guess, triple the population of the United States within 17 years. You've already won. If you've got triple, you don't need there's no war.
Mm.
You own this place now.
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
There are 100 reasons why these plans are stupid.
Yeah, that's actually a good plan. To accomplish the thing that you want, as far as like a linear goal plan to solve a problem, it's just impossible on account of all the reasons that makes it impossible.
Well,
you know?
I think that one of the difficulties for Alex, and it's kind of one of the benefits of his show, like moving fast, is there's never really time to think about things.
No.
But one of the shortcomings of his conspiracy thought process is he really never engages with if this is true, then what else is true?
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. Because the implications of a lot of the points along the way to achieving the conspiracy either already have achieved them.
Right.
Or are run counter to the plan that you're supposed to be heading towards.
Yes.
He doesn't really, he doesn't wrestle with that.
None of his plans seem to be geared towards accomplishing a thing.
No. It's because his enemies are imaginary.
That's true.
So there's going to be a draft.
Well, I mean, we've got an extra 600 million, so might as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's go through these documents and look how it ties into the push for a new national draft coming in. Because they let illegal aliens become U.S. citizens or on the path of that by joining the military. They had to first purge it, though.
What?
The loyal Americans. They do that with the critical race theory, the transgenderism, the rest of it.
Replacement migration is a solution to declining and aging populations. UN.org. Now, the ADL says this doesn't exist. You should be arrested if you talk about it. The U.S. military is laying the groundwork to reinstate the draft. Von Meese Institute does a great job of laying out how they're promoting it and how Democrat lawmakers are pushing it.
So just from a storytelling perspective, I think a lot of this is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Like, if you follow Alex's train of thought, here's what he's saying the globalists are doing. So the military is trying to drive out all the good patriots by supporting things like LGBTQ issues, critical race theory.
That'll get them.
That will have the effect of all of the good people quitting so that they can be replaced by undocumented immigrants who are under the sway of the globalists, so they'll do whatever they're told, unlike most soldiers I've ever heard of.
It's very unusual for them to
do it, follow orders. So this is all part of a plan to reinstate the draft, which seems like it wouldn't be necessary since part of the plan involves filling up all the recruitment quotas with immigrants.
Yeah.
Why would the globalists want to conscript a ton of random people when they're likely to have the exact same problem with the folks they had to drive out of the service in the first place?
Yeah.
Seems self-contradictory.
You would at the very least wind up drafting some of the people that you kicked out.
Right. It's so dumb. So this is what happens when Alex has a couple of headlines that he feels like he can connect, but it just doesn't work out in practice. He's got this plan to be a racist, xenophobic shithead about immigrants and how they're going to take all your guns, and he sees this headline about the draft, and he just can't resist adding it to the stat heap.
You just got
to
add the draft, you know?
He thinks it adds more to his argument, but if you pay attention, it really just reveals that he's winging all of this as he goes along. As for that article about the draft, if anyone tells you that the Meese Institute did a good job of something, you can tune them right out. I've legitimately never heard a good thing come from those libertarian fucks, and this article is no exception. It's an op-ed about an op-ed in the U.S. Army War College's journal. It's
wow.
Yeah.
The fucking prestigious and well-publicized.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
It's an assessment of lessons that can be learned from the conflict that's broken out after Russia invaded Ukraine. One of the many points that it brings up is that if the U.S. is in an all-out, full-scale combat war situation, the existing reserves and volunteer model is not going to work. There just aren't enough people to fill the expected vacancies you'd end up with due to casualties and injuries. And this article suggests that scenario, quote, may well require a reconceptualization of the 1970s and 1980s volunteer force and a move toward partial conscription. Now, keep in mind that this article also brings up the 20 years of war in Iraq and Afghanistan as not that kind of war scenario. So that, as severe as that was, that isn't what we're talking about.
No.
This is talking about what would be necessary if the U.S. were to go into a ground war with a country like Russia or China. And even then, the article doesn't necessarily lead to the conclusion that you need a draft, since we might see a, quote, future of largely unmanned or remotely manned ground combat vehicles. If anything, this article is about training and education, mostly. A draft doesn't make sense in modern America, and no one would go along with it. Further, this article isn't arguing for one, nor is it laying the groundwork for it. And even beyond that, a draft makes zero sense inside Alex's racist conspiracy theory. It's all just bullshit Alex is trying to tie together to kill time and freak out his panicked white audience.
Do you know how much a draft would cost?
So much.
You gotta feed those people, you gotta clothe them, you gotta pay them, you gotta do all this shit. In this economy?
And I think the lessons learned from Vietnam War era should tell you that a lot of people are going to resist and not cooperate.
Nope, I don't believe these people are capable of lessons. I disregard that argument entirely.
But I think the public took that lesson, that you can resist the draft.
That I agree with.
And that at the end of the day, like, if they're drafting you and they're going to send you into some hostile combat environment, what do you have to lose by resisting the draft?
Yeah.
They'd take you to a prison?
Yeah. It's going to be better than the ones over there.
Right. Or are they going to force you to, like, go to the war? Because then that's the same outcome as if you had gone along with the draft. It would never fly.
I mean, the thing that always wild me out is you're going to force me to go somewhere and then you're going to give me a gun? That's a wild series of events there.
You might not make it through the selective service.
I don't think I would make it through there. I wouldn't make it through there.
Yeah. I understand the obsession with the draft, sort of.
I get it.
But I do not feel like it's realistic.
I mean, I think part of that just simply comes from it is so insane that it happened.
True.
That it ever happened is madness. And it really represents something that I don't think can ever be accepted, which is that the government should never be allowed to force me to go die.
Uh-huh. Or kill.
That's simple. Or kill. Yeah. Yeah. It's that simple.
Well, and even in draft situations, you could be a conscientious objector. Like my grandpa, or maybe my great uncle or something like that was a conscientious objector and ended up working at a national park.
Yeah.
Like, because he's a Mennonite, you know?
Yeah.
Can't kill people.
I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Crazy.
These immigrants that are coming in and being brought in,
yeah,
they're mostly military-aged men. Do you find that coincidental?
I mean...
What a coincidence.
One, I don't find it true, and two, if it was, it would be.
Your instincts are sharp.
Profile of the unauthorized population of the U.S. The vast majority are men, and the majority of them are military-aged men. This is a report from years ago. It's far worse now.
From years ago.
Same thing in Europe. 80%+ are military-aged men. Military-industrial complex is making hundreds of billions of dollars, and they need a military draft in the U.S. to take things to the next level. Will the U.S. reinstitute the draft for the Russian-Ukraine war?
We're not in it!
The uncertain future of the U.S. military's all-volunteer force. Council on Foreign Relations says we need a draft. Why bringing back the draft could end America's forever wars, some say. No, because it's going to be illegal aliens that are given citizenship to do it.
Yeah, that's the worry about the draft.
That's Time Magazine.
So wait, if the immigrants are being offered paths to citizenship as part of signing up to serve the country, that's not a draft. That's an incentive to volunteer. I don't think Alex knows what words mean.
I don't. I agree. I agree with you.
This is convoluted shit.
Strongly.
So more importantly, Alex is just straight up lying about this demographic breakdown of immigrant populations. This is a set of data put out by the Migration Policy Institute, which is a group Alex would absolutely hate. They have an advocacy for immigrants. By their estimate, there are approximately 11 million unauthorized persons living in the United States. And Alex is claiming that this report says that they are mostly military-aged men. A simple scroll down the data shows that 46% or over 5 million are women. A further 5% are under the age of 16. Another 25% are people over the age of 45, which we can assume is past prime military recruitment age. The image that Alex is painting just isn't justified by the data, and this is the source that he's citing. He's way off, which is part of why he has to say that these are old numbers and it's much worse now, because that's a claim that's too vague to be checkable.
Mm.
What numbers are current enough? Where do the goalposts need to be for him to accept that he's wrong? It's a loser's game to try and chase that down, and it is not worth it. The point here, though, is that Alex wants the audience to think that all the immigrants coming in are military-aged men, and he uses that specific language because he wants the audience to see all immigrants as a potential violent threat. He wants the idea of immigration to be equivalent, to, in the listener's mind, to a hostile invasion, because Alex is, at his core, a white nationalist who doesn't want people to think, he doesn't want people that he thinks are different than him coming into the country.
Mm-hmm.
I found some other newer data sets that contradict Alex's idea that the population of undocumented immigrants has been more overwhelmingly military-aged men. And actually, one of the interesting things that Alex isn't taking into consideration is that a lot of the people who are in this population have been here for a long time. A large percentage of undocumented immigrants are people who came here and then overstayed their visa. A 2019 paper put forth an estimate that about 62% of that population had been living in the United States for more than 10 years. Anyway, just further full-spectrum analysis Alex is refusing to do, because what's more important for him is to demonize vulnerable populations and make his audience fearful of them and angry at them, because that's what sells super male vitality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. I mean, why are you doing this? Also, foreign soldiers?
I need to clarify this.
Yeah.
Are you assuming that there are people who are enlisted in foreign armies who are then posing as immigrants that are coming in?
And yes. Then,
okay. I'm not sure if that's fully what Alex is saying.
Wait,
I think he would enjoy that wrinkle.
Okay.
But that's not fully what he's saying.
Oh, so these are just people who are here
right.
for the intent of being here to do things.
Yes, who are being enlisted.
And then the government is incentivizing them to join the United States military.
Right.
Thereby making them foreign yes. soldiers.
Yes. And part of the reason that this is the way that it's going is because there's such an obsession in Alex's conspiracy community
yeah.
of the idea of the UN bringing in foreign troops
right.
on U.S. soil in order to impose one world government
right.
edicts.
But see, that one, at the very least, makes sense insofar as these are not people that are going through the military training system that we created to get them to do what we say. That's crazy.
You're right. But yeah. he needs to make this evocative of that legacy.
Right.
And that's why there is that confusion and why you were led to
yeah,
think
I mean,
that.
I just feel like it's impossible to believe that a bunch of people could go through military training assimilated with everybody else and then somehow still have the strength of will to be like, hey, buddy, we're going to kill everybody, right? Like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. I could be
full
wrong.
Full spectrum analysis must be done. Mm. So Alex has some another clip here, another source he wants to cite, and it has to do with customs and Border Patrol.
Sure.
And I will say that I made my first trip through customs coming back from the UK.
Yeah.
It was fine. I mean, it's a long line, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was envious of your pass.
Yeah.
You had for the quick line.
Oof.
Particularly because there was a crying baby right next to me in the line, which, boy, I need to work on my patience. That really got me.
You'll never get through.
Doing a lot of, like, squeezing my fist, just like,
You'll never get through a crying baby in an airport. It's just not going to happen. It doesn't happen for me.
Tough.
That's why I went to a government office and was like, I'll do whatever you want to go through just so I can go through customs a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Because I'm never going to be able to survive this again.
Yeah. That line.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep.
Anyway, Alex has some thoughts about statistics.
Okay.
CBP enforcement statistics for 2023. The vast majority, the Border Patrol reports, are illegal aliens, military age men.
So this page that Alex is reading off of is the Customs and Border Patrol Enforcement Statistics. It doesn't have any of the information that he's reporting. You have to go deeper into the CBP stats section to find demographic breakdowns, and even then, they don't specify genders. If you do trace it down, you find that in 2023, encounters with single adults was down 16.3% year over year, and encounters with family units was up 18.2%. Not sure how Alex accounts for that, but I guess a family unit is just code for multiple military-aged men.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got two dads, two brothers, family. Yeah, it's a nuclear bomb family. Okay, I don't know.
I saw the excitement in your eyes.
I'm running out of gas. I'm running out of gas, man. Come on.
That excitement was so poorly advised.
Still jet lag.
Yeah.
I know, it was heartbreaking.
You're doing all right.
Whenever it came out of my mouth, it was even more heartbreaking than I imagined.
That joke, notwithstanding, you're doing great.
Okay. All right.
So Alex has no idea what the data says here, and he hasn't looked into this source at all. He has a heading of this CBP enforcement statistics that he's flashing up to the audience, and he's making up his own statistics to claim it contains. This is a malicious version of lying that he's engaged in.
Yeah.
Real, real shitty.
Not good.
So did you know that non-citizens can be cops? Illegal aliens, undocumented immigrants are going to be made into cops.
I feel like they can't just by virtue of you don't even need a law, right? They just check your social security number, right?
Mm, undocumented immigrants are going to be policing all the cities.
Okay.
Illinois legislation would allow non-U.S. citizens to become police officers. Other states are doing it, already have, like New Mexico. Now let's tie it into this, and I'll tie it all together. Bloomberg. Corporate America kept its promise to hire more people of color. Minorities are driving, delivering all the U.S. labor supply growth. Bloomberg. 94% of new corporate jobs go to non-whites. Corporate America promised when Biden was elected to hire non-whites. They delivered 94%. After BLM and S&P 100 added over 300,000 jobs, 23% were black workers. Now let's look at the numbers from the study. Here's a graph. Here is the number of people of color hired, 94%.
What?
And here is the white people hired in the last 2.5 years, 6%.
This is a pie graph.
Talk about discrimination, ladies and gentlemen.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it?
Got caught off by the break.
Yep.
And it wasn't a graph. It's like an infographic.
Oh, no.
So it's just like a clustering of little people.
Oh, boy.
This represents the pile of white applicants.
That's no good.
So I'm always amazed when Alex reads off 3 or 4 headlines about the same story and is seeming to be acting like it's about different things. All those headlines are about the same Bloomberg analysis. It's the propaganda radio show equivalent of a high school student throwing a bunch of bullshit into their work cited page to make the teacher think that they actually did the work.
Right.
It's really transparent and screams that he's not prepared or has read any of these articles, though.
No.
It's pretty embarrassing.
No.
That Illinois law that Alex is talking about only covers legal permanent residents and green card holders, as well as people who have had asylum approved or their refugee status approved.
Yeah.
It's for people who are legally authorized to be employed in the United States.
Yeah.
Obviously.
You can't write a law that says a law is against the law.
Mm. Further, it only applies to people in such a situation like that who are legally allowed to work, who are also authorized to carry a gun, which is an even smaller subset.
Yeah, I was going to say that's even. Listen, trying to get a gun is race conscious. OK, yeah.
All of these actual details haven't stopped people like Ron DeSantis and Lauren Boebert from claiming it's all about making undocumented immigrants cops because they're stupid and they thrive on inciting white panic. Further, I don't understand how Alex made that transition here. If you pay attention, he's talking about immigrants and his fears about them, specifically that they're all military-aged men and now they're going to be allowed to be cops and rule over everybody. Then he jumps right into the barrage of headlines about a Bloomberg analysis of S&P 100 companies and their new hires being 94% non-white. That isn't about immigrants. It's a completely different issue, but Alex is making them connect, and it's really easy to see why the audience would go along with it. That's because the non-whiteness of the immigrants is the thing that Alex is concerned with, so the non-whiteness of the corporate hires matches up with the theme of what he's saying completely. If you're paying attention to the actual subject he's talking about, it's confusing because these things aren't related. But in InfoWars linguistics, this makes perfect sense because it's all about white victimhood. And further, the police aren't an S&P 100 company. Neither is the military.
I think what's interesting now, I mean, sure, all the lies, sure. But I do think what's interesting about this is that it implies an awareness that cops abuse people.
Well, Alex's nightmarish future.
But I mean, even then, we have to, if we keep going along this line, right? So these are the first cops ever to abuse people.
Mm-hmm.
Are they the only cops working in that precinct? Or are there other, presumably legal cops in that department who would cover for these people?
They're afraid. Those other cops are afraid.
So what you're saying is that there is a systemic pattern of abuse that comes with cops. I mean, because ostensibly, their idea is to protect and serve, right? So somebody who is not from here is absolutely capable of protecting and serving.
Sure.
You're admitting that cops are here to beat people up.
I think that you could probably draw a cleaner line between your thinking than Alex can with his.
Probably.
But you notice he got cut off by the break there.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's getting into this Bloomberg article, break came. And I've noticed he's skipping breaks a bit. And I think that's because he's keenly aware that there is no radio audience.
That probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's other audio sources, though. And so we're going to pick that up here from where he was in the commercial.
Gotcha.
Just lying his ass off about this Bloomberg article.
Amazing.
Talk about discrimination, ladies and gentlemen. This is it. And here's all the breakdowns of professionals, managers, less senior roles. All of it is the same numbers over and over again. So what's really happening here? It's very simple. I'm going to lay it out.
So even just from a visual perspective, Alex should know better than to try and pull off this lie. This is definitely not what the Bloomberg article says. In fact, it shows super unequal levels of employment through different levels of jobs. The infographic Alex is showing here shows the number of jobs gained in each of these different strata of employment, broken down by race. In terms of less senior roles, which is described as like sales, labor, and service type roles, there were 18.8 thousand less white people in those positions year over year. Comparatively, there were 106,000 more Hispanic people, 50.8 thousand more black people, 19.2 thousand more Asian people, and 19.4 thousand more folks of other races holding these jobs. Big increases in these other groups, decrease in white. Folks, this is where the bulk of the numbers you're seeing reflected in this report exist. And as you go up the ladder, it doesn't become more equal. In the professional category, which is jobs that generally require some higher degree, 29.2 thousand more positions were filled by white candidates compared to 15.5 thousand and 15.6 thousand by Hispanic and black job hunters, respectively. Asian applicants ended up getting 41,000 of these positions, which admittedly is a big jump year over year and is closer higher than the number additions of white employees. Low and mid-level manager hires were fairly even across the board, but when you get to senior-level executives, it's very white. White hires made up a little less than the number for Hispanic, black, and Asian hires combined on that level.
Yeah.
A little lower down in the article, there's another graphic that reflects the fact that most of the employees at these S&P companies are white. For instance, over all levels of employment, 12 of the companies reviewed had workforces that were over 70% white, including 3 over 75% and 1 over 80. All of these dynamics are not captured by Alex's analysis because what he's doing isn't analysis. Knowing more about this subject and article would get in the way of his ability to use it for his purposes. So he's incentivized to know less and make up more, which is what he's doing.
Yeah.
See, an idiot.
It is so funny that you're right on. The only people that this article is possibly useful for are Alex and the corporate execs who want to feel like they're not racist today.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That is for no one else.
Maybe.
So good job, Bloomberg writer.
I feel like maybe some unengaged types of people, maybe of goodwill, but sort of milquetoast people on the left.
Sure.
Could maybe feel a sense of we did it. You know, maybe it's for them a little bit too.
Oof.
But behind,
they gotta not have that.
But beyond that is really mostly serving the purposes of the company's propaganda.
And I imagine they're also the ones who are the executives in many of the companies.
Maybe.
Yep.
I don't know. But I feel like those people at the companies might be a little bit more nefarious and self-aware of.
That's true. That is true.
So Alex lays out essentially the beats of this baseless racist conspiracy that he's selling.
I'm gonna lay it out. You turn off the resources with global investment and with lockdowns for 3 years in the third world. Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, poor areas of Asia. You set up UN refugee centers to take military-age men, set them up, give them debit cards, give them paths to enter, and then send them to Europe, Western Europe, and the United States.
Debit cards?
You sign them up once they get here with Democrat Party and leftist law firms in Europe. They then pay part of their paycheck and the welfare they're signed up for. No one enforces it in blue cities, so they get two paychecks, but either paycheck won't pay for them, so they've got to go on welfare and have a job, but a large portion of each check goes to the globalist deep state. So they fund themselves while they create this permanent underclass. So the third world, 80-plus million, the UN admits, starved to death under lockdowns. Not from the virus, from the lockdowns. They're forced to come here. They're then brainwashed, turned into ideologues, told America's bad, given an anti-white brainwashing course. Then they're put into the workforce and the infrastructure. Predominantly, the U.S. military is the biggest hire of the, quote, migrants. That's why they're not letting families and stuff through as much as they let military-age men, particularly those that have criminal backgrounds. Just like the Russians had their Wagner group that was made up of ex-cons. This has been done many times.
Just a few months ago, InfoWars was running a recruitment ad for the Wagner group. So Alex can fuck right off with that nonsense at the end there.
Wow.
As to the larger picture of that clip, nothing that Alex is saying is real. This is literally entirely built from his own paranoid racist imagination. One of the things that's worrying about this clip in particular, however, is that there's a coherence to the narrative, like we were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit, but there's connective tissue that links the thoughts together.
Yeah.
The threads of various other conspiracy theories are being intertwined here to present to the audience a larger meta-conspiracy, and the only point of that meta-conspiracy is to sow fear and distrust of immigrants and non-white people that you might suspect are immigrants.
Right.
I don't know how else to put this other than to say that this is beyond Alex's capabilities. Someone else helped him with this, and if I had to guess, it's something that he's getting from an explicit white nationalist or from a white nationalist website. Alex is doing his level best to sanitize the message and make it appear to not be white nationalist in nature, so the less extreme members of his audience can accept it, but make no mistake, this is intensely racist white nationalist coverage and messaging.
Yeah.
There's also just a bunch of factual errors in what Alex is saying, so I've chosen just a few to discuss.
Sure.
Alex says that 80 million plus people died from starvation because of the lockdowns. That's just not true, and if Alex cared at all about this issue of food insecurity around the world, he would never behave this way. There are many countries in the developing world where hunger is a severe issue, and if you consult the folks who work to fight that hunger, you'll never hear them cite a globalist conspiracy involving fake outbreak lockdowns as a serious factor. The number one driver of food insecurity in many of these countries, like Ethiopia, Somalia, and South Sudan, is the climate. These are countries that were already food insecure generally and have been facing catastrophic situations like extended droughts and flooding. Other countries have conflict-related food dynamics, like in Afghanistan, Nigeria, and Yemen. Outbreaks of fighting limit the importing of necessary goods like food, and the people suffer for it. This is a very real problem, but the way Alex talks about it is bullshit. There were impacts of COVID had on supply chains, which were felt in these developing countries, but 80 million additional people didn't die of starvation because of it. Alex just has a headline from like 2 years ago where the UN food program head was warning that food insecurity could get worse, and Alex has lied about and embellished that headline since in order to use it as a touchstone in his conspiracy theory. He's using the dead bodies of people in developing countries as a prop for his presentation, which is meant to make his overwhelmingly white audience hate people from developing countries even more and make them resist aiding them in any way. And that circle is not an accident.
No.
Alex further says that the military is the largest employer of immigrants, and that's complete bullshit. The military doesn't even rank compared to manufacturing, agriculture, construction, and employment in private household capacities. This is just a completely fabricated stat that Alex is throwing out because he needs to make the audience scared that this bullshit conspiracy he's selling them is much larger than they think. Oh, it's so big.
I will say this.
Yeah.
I know it had to have been helped by someone else, because the ultimate goal of this conspiracy does not square with the ultimate goals of other globalist conspiracies.
Mm.
How are we eradicating 95% of the population through this?
Well, I guess you could link that pretty easily, because these troops that are coming in will take the guns, and taking the guns is an essential step to killing off 95%
sure,
of people.
But we're adding 600 million people here.
Right, but they'll be killed too.
In this plan, I feel like that's going to be way too long for to kill them, to execute this plan and still eradicate 95% of the population.
The globalists like to...
Furthermore...
Dude, they like to take the long way.
You're giving all of these people who you want to eradicate a shit ton of guns.
Right.
In the hundreds of millions.
Right. You got to sometimes, you know, the globalists want to play on hard mode. They like a challenge.
Is that what we're doing? Are they setting themselves up to fight?
This is new game plus for them.
Oh, man.
They already did this with another planet.
I just can't.
They did this with Tiamat.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, they just stick with one plan.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. It's a load of shit. And so is this.
And now you've got a domestic security force just as big and just as strong as our military in the police forces and in the military. So this isn't some wives' tale. It's not some Red Dawn scenario from a movie. This is really going on. And whether you're in Europe or here, they are putting the illegal aliens in bureaucrat jobs and law enforcement jobs.
I'm sorry?
Because they don't speak the language and they'll follow orders. They have units made up in Europe and here of the groups that will enforce. And I'm nothing against Sikhs.
What?
They want their own independence, they're their own Hindu group. They've been involved in terror attacks against the Indian government. If you go to England, you look this up, for decades, they have whole units of Sikhs that go out and do whatever they're told by the government. Because it's a unit, they can do it, they'll all watch each other's back. It's a mafia. That's why Illinois and other states are legalizing illegal aliens being your police.
Alex is completely wrong about this whole thing. As I mentioned earlier, the law in Illinois only applies to immigrants and refugees who would be legally allowed to work and who are allowed to carry a firearm.
And Sikhs.
If you are an undocumented immigrant, you are neither of those things, and you will not be allowed to be a cop.
Unless you're a Sikh.
Alex is just lying about this because it plays into the white fears that excite his audience.
White fears of Sikhs?
Apparently.
Yeah.
So with that Sikh thing in England, it's a little bit different than what Alex is saying.
Yeah.
So there are not whole units made up of Sikh individuals. However, there is a group called the National Sikh Police Association, which represents UK citizens of the Sikh faith who are employed as police.
Right.
There have been historical tensions between the Sikh community and the police for a number of reasons. One is the desire for the creation of an independent state, ideally carved out of what is currently India. That causes a bit of tension.
Yeah.
Another major issue is that the Sikhs are required by the articles of their faith to carry a ceremonial dagger called a kirpan at all times, which has led to tension between security forces at places like airports. Sikh folks have been arrested for wearing their kirpan in public, and this has caused a lot of distrust aimed in both directions.
Sure.
Another article of faith is that Sikhs must wear a turban, which is a problem for some branches of the police who are required to wear bulletproof helmets. This was an example of a situation that got resolved, where Sikh officers are allowed to wear smaller turbans that fit within their helmets. The National Sikh Police Association is an attempt to smooth out these relations and mediate in a way that's productive to both groups' interests, spearheaded by Sikh individuals who are employed as cops. And Alex is representing this as groups of Sikhs who will do the government's bidding and kill everyone. It's fucking nonsense.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no opinions.
In many ways, this is no different than any other group representing specific interests, like the numerous Christian police associations in the UK and here in the United States.
Quite a few.
Alex has taken this group and reported to his audience that there's a special strike force that the UK can use against the white population. And these are the fingerprints of intense racism, just on full display. And, you know, it makes me sad that his audience probably just is like, yeah, that's real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, I don't know what the solution is, but to all of the things that you just told me about, we're doing the wrong answers. All of them.
So look, I know this is a little bit dense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, but like I said, Alex is trying.
Sure.
There's a presentation that he's putting on, and when he steps up and does a little bit of this stuff, I feel like it's behooves me to do the same. But also, I assure you, in a little bit, we'll get to nonsense.
Oh, I forgot we were ever... Yeah, okay.
There is silly nonsense
ahead.
Sure, but for now, we must deal with the xenophobic racism.
Okay.
So they know exactly what they're doing. They impoverish them. They destroy them. They bring who's left here, military-age men. They form them into these groups. And then the majority, the largest block, look it up. Type in migrants. People immigrating, just type, because they don't call them illegal aliens. Migrants make up the biggest percentage of the new military signups and recruits. And so they get here, they sign them up, they give military training, and now our military is being transferred from being a U.S. citizen volunteer force, and they do that to run out the volunteer force, transgenderism, critical race theory, all the anti-white crap. So all the rural people, all the Southerners, all the folks that know how to skin a buck, run a trot line, that made up our military, the world feared, they're getting out. And then now you've got the military age men. Look at that. You see women there? Yeah, maybe 1 out of 100 there. I mean, look at it.
So, Alex, what he's doing here is just making a great replacement theory specific to the armed services.
Yeah, that's weird.
You kind of have to sit back and admire how desperately he's trying not to say that the people he wants in the army are white people, with how many attempts at euphemism he employs.
Boy.
They can skin a buck, run a trot line, these southern people.
Wow.
Pretty admirable.
It's something.
Alex is a bit of a liar about the military here. You can't just be an undocumented immigrant and join the military, although you also don't have to be a citizen. There's a middle ground that Alex is pretending doesn't exist, which is if you're a permanent resident but not a citizen. You can have a green card and join the military, for example.
Sure.
Alex is pretending you can just illegally cross the border and then show up at a recruitment center and they'll take you in and give you a uniform and a gun. That's absurd. That's not how any of this works. You have to be a permanent resident, and you have to pass certain English fluency tests in order to be able to make it even in the door. This is how our country has always worked, and approximately 5,000 non-citizen applicants enlist each year. This isn't the majority of enlistments like Alex is saying. It's closer to 6% of the total number of new recruits. It's important to understand the way Alex is misrepresenting this, because underneath that, his flagrant racism and xenophobia are on clear display. But it's the misrepresentation kind of has to be understood in order to get under it.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. Isn't he saying that that's our recruitment process now in the South and rural areas?
What do you mean?
To incentivize people to join the military in almost exactly the same way as he's saying to that.
It's always been in terms of you can get free education. You know,
right. But he's pointing out that they're preying on a certain group of people by choosing this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he's also saying that they're preying on the run-a-trout line douchebags.
Skin a buck, run a trout line?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So he's saying that our military is fundamentally predating on people who are created by the system that impoverishes them.
I think you're going to drive yourself crazy.
I'm just saying, he doesn't
running
understand
down these logical
what
threads.
He doesn't understand what words mean.
Well, again, this comes down to the inability or unwillingness to play if this, then that kind of scenarios. Because what are the implications of the things he's saying? That's exactly the point you're making.
It's not fair. It's not fair. You should have to deal with at least one.
One
implication? You should have to deal with at least one implication of what it is. That's my new law. That's a law. That's my new law.
It's an interesting law.
Illegal, undocumented, join the military, and also you have to have one hypothetical. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I support at least the second part.
Okay.
Information abuse laws.
Sure.
So anyway, immigrants are Red Dawn scenario.
Uh-huh.
So you bring in your Red Dawn force. They don't parachute in like the 1980s movie with Charlie Sheen and the rest of them. No, they're brought in, they're prepared, they're brought into the cities, they're given jobs, and then later they will do whatever their sponsors say. Because if they don't riot, or they don't kill, or they don't commit a crime, they are deported. So they follow their orders. So this is the globalist takeover program.
This is insanely racist and just full of shit. I don't know how else to say it.
I mean, why follow your orders? There are roughly 300 plus million of you, and you all have guns now. Just don't follow the orders.
Follow the orders for a while
until
the status quo changes.
Totally, and then now you've got so many more guns. Why would you give the people that...
You know what? Here's what's interesting. I think that is the conspiracy Alex would have done like in 2006 or something.
Yeah.
Earlier time in his career, it would
you shouldn't,
the immigrants that come in will usurp the military.
I mean, sure. That's so strange, but okay.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a naturalization that is offered for people who enlist.
Okay.
And Alex misrepresents this in a way that is glaring.
There it is, military naturalization statistics. U.S. service members, veterans, and other families may be eligible for certain immigration benefits in recognition of their important sacrifice. Specifically, veterans and current service members may be eligible to become U.S. citizens through naturalization under special provisions of the Immigration Naturalization Act, NINA. These provisions reduce or eliminate certain general requirements for naturalization, including the requirements for the applicant to have resided or been physically present in the United States for a specific period of time for naturalization. That's the new rules 2002 that was changed. So that's what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen. It's not coming. It's not developing. It's here.
Yeah, I mean, that's all real that he's reading, but it doesn't apply to undocumented immigrants. It applies to permanent residents who enlist. If they would like to become citizens, then there are incentives for naturalization that the military offers. And to not, I think, would be incredibly shitty.
I'm going to throw this out at you.
What's up?
I refuse to give a fuck about this. That is somebody else's problem. All of that. In my life, I refuse to have somebody like Alex read that to me and pretend that I have to care. I don't care if that particular part is part of some grander conspiracy. I don't fucking care about that specific shit.
Well, here's what
get
I would
get it out of here.
I don't care.
Throw it out of here.
I don't care about it in terms of Alex's use of it and such.
Sure.
But I do think, as a standing policy, if somebody is a permanent resident and they care about the country and want to serve the country, I think not offering some kind of, hey, you know what? You are exactly the sort of folks we like to have around here. You certainly would like to be a part of our country. We'd like to help you become a citizen. If you didn't do that, I think that would be real shitty.
I think that's great. You should go talk to somebody else about it.
Fair
forever.
Enough. Fair
forever.
Enough.
Forever. I don't care.
Would you like to talk about Obama?
I mean, fine.
So let's go ahead now. And let's roll a clip of Obama right before he was elected telling the world what the plan was. Here it is.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded. We cannot continue to rely only on our military.
Plays it twice.
Ugh.
So, you know, the image here, you're getting the image that's being presented?
By Alex or by Obama?
By Alex.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the civilians are the immigrants, and they're going to be, they're going to supplant the military.
And that Obama was talking about that years and years ago.
Sure.
It's all a plan.
Yeah. What was he talking about?
He was talking about expanding AmeriCorps.
Oh.
Yeah. Just before that clip that Alex played, Obama says, quote, "When it comes to the challenges we face, the American people are not the problem. We are they are the answer. So we're going to send more college graduates to mentor our young people. We'll call on Americans to join an energy corps to conduct renewable energy and environmental cleanup projects in their neighborhoods across the country." This part of the speech wasn't about creating secret minority-only police forces. It was about the government facilitating civic projects through things like AmeriCorps. It was also about expanding the Peace Corps and Foreign Service, specifically as an attempt to undo the damage the Bush administration had done to the country's position in terms of diplomacy.
Yeah.
Alex knows all this, or the most generous interpretation I have is that he's so painfully uncurious that he just saw this clip of Obama and said, that sounds scary enough, and then he never looked into it, which I find almost impossible, but maybe possible.
I mean, it does sound scary enough.
Yeah, and he's like, I could use that for so many things.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I would definitely keep that one in my back pocket, because there's a lot of uses for, we're gonna get a civilian national security force as strong as the military. Mm-hmm. I get it. Yeah sure.
So one thing that I think is really bizarre. So we talked about the way that this has connective tissue, that this conspiracy makes some sense.
Sure.
Generally.
Sure.
But it also lacks coherence in that Alex is taking this from, like, okay, they're trying to create these ways to have these immigrants come in and then make them the military police and such.
Uh-huh.
But then he's also trying to weave this into, like, Soros DAs not prosecuting black crime and stuff like that. He's trying to, like, use this very specifically to fuel his more general race conspiracies.
Okay.
And so we hear a little bit of this here.
Just as well funded.
So let's explain how this works. Starting 6 years ago, the George Soros DAs that control every major city in the country, any major city, most even mid-sized cities, it's like 1,000-plus cities, look it up, said, we don't care, as long as a person's brown or black, if they shoot somebody, they rape somebody, we let them out, or we don't even charge them. You see it all over the news. We're going to allow people to loot and rob. And then, of course, the majority of black folks and people aren't criminals, but there's a large minority of that minority that are going to do it, and they're emboldened. And so they rob all the major blue cities until the malls close, the Walgreens close, the CVS close, the grocery store close, and they go, oh, don't worry, we're going to federalize things and open up the old Walmarts. Biden's going to give us billions of dollars.
We're going to give you free food through these things. So this is the process, the processes. And now the criminals are fanning out into the suburbs and the rural areas. And when you shoot somebody, even in your small town that's breaking in your house at 2 a.m. with a gun, you learn that your small town of 5,000 people elected a Soros mayor
Dun-dun.
Or a Soros DA, and you get charged. Figure it out yet?
Figured something out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that this is complete nonsense.
Ugh.
But it's important to point out that this is indistinguishable at this point from outright, like, white supremacist messaging. One of the hallmarks of the Klan and outlets like the Council of Conservative Citizens is the fantasy that the system doesn't punish crimes committed by non-white people and crimes committed against white people. The reason that this is the case is that these groups know that fear and white victimhood narratives are some of the most potent recruiting tools. Amplifying these feelings can have the effect of overriding a person's critical thinking skills and putting them into an emotional decision-making state where they're forming impressions based on a fraudulent sense of existential doom. It's a tried-and-true tactic in bigot communities over time, and Alex isn't going to be the only one not using that.
No. He's a white nationalist. Go for it. Yeah.
You seem deflated.
Oh, I just, go for it. Be more racist. Fine.
So the Soros DAs and what have you, you know, they don't do it. They're not going to solve any of these crimes.
Right. Right.
Because there's a terrible, crimes are all being committed against white people, and the police aren't going to do anything about it. The Soros DAs aren't going to charge them.
Right. But here's the thing, right? If the Soros DAs are in charge of immigrant police departments that already have full sway under the law, like, what? That's overkill. That's extraneous.
That is an element of this wrinkle that Alex is not discussing. He's not full spectrum analyzing.
See,
that.
Here's the issue. This is a monopoly, or this is vertical integration, and I don't appreciate it. They need to have some separation of. Never mind.
Well, here's the great news about it. It's all bullshit.
That is good news.
Alex decides to yell at black people who will not speak out enough about the plight of white people.
You can't swing a stick in the UN or swing a stick in the dark in the WEF or any of these places and not hit a Nazi. And boy, the white supremacists have a fit about that when I just say, what is this sick relationship with the ADL and Nazis? Because they don't want to say Nazis are bad, too. I say the ADL's bad and the Nazis are bad. They're all vermin, criminals, out to destroy us. Out to divide us.
You understand that's incredibly anti-Semitic.
The Nazis use race to control. The liberals use it. The left uses it. That's why I say, hey, they're calling everybody Nazis. Closest thing I ever saw to a Nazi is a leftist. The Democratic Party, the KKK. They say the NRA is the KKK. Remember that? That was a big talking point in the last 5 years. The NRA was founded to counter the KKK. It's upside down world.
That doesn't sound true.
I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of 20-1 black-on-white crime and white people being preyed upon because a bunch of black people have been brainwashed. We deserve to be killed because we're a virus. We're a mosquito. We're a piece of garbage. And we need black people, which are starting to do it, to speak out against it and say, we're not part of that. Like white people saying, we're not part of the KKK. I want black people to say, we're not part of these racial attacks on white people. If you don't, you're part of it.
Whoa.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Has Alex... listen to anyone from the
no.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't even need you to clarify.
Okay.
Answer is no. He's not listening to anybody.
All right. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it is always fun whenever they're like, where are these people condemning this stuff? And it's like, you deliberately go out of your way to not listen to them and to keep them from saying things.
Yeah, and ignore if you accidentally come upon something.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But it is interesting that this is the way that the entire pageant and presentation about his conspiracy hidden in plain view ends.
Yeah.
Passionately screaming at black people to condemn attacks on white people.
That
does seem like he cares more about that than anything else he's said so far.
Right.
There's a lot of passion behind it.
I think in terms of our foreign troops, immigrants, the draft is coming back, shotgun spaghetti at the very beginning.
Yeah.
I really feel like we ended far afield.
We sure did. If you're actually paying attention to, like, the points.
Right.
If you look at it as all really just different tendrils coming out of white victimhood narratives,
right.
Then it all makes total sense that that's where his brain goes.
Yeah.
Like, that's the essential through line that I think is important to approach this content with, is like, maybe he's saying these things and they don't make sense, but maybe he's actually talking about something else underneath the surface that does make sense for this connection to be made. So that's where he's at.
Racism does break your brain, doesn't it?
It kind of does.
Yeah.
So we're done with that.
Okay.
And now we get on to what I would describe as the beginning of some silly bullshit.
Okay.
Which is where we will wrap things up, because I don't want to talk about that weird British journalist.
Okay.
So this all begins because Alex got mad at a tweet. Would you believe it?
I believe it.
You know, I saw this on Twitter. I'm going to go to your phone calls. And it's so illustrative.
He says
Twitter.
Put this
up on screen, please. Some leftist, Schroeder Schneechy Belly, says, I swear to God, every historical fact trotted out by the right is either some tinfoil hat conspiracy theory made up by someone like Alex Jones, or, like in the case of this map, something literally everybody but them has known since learning it in junior high. No, it's not taught in junior high that 98% of black slaves were sent to the Middle East or to South America or to Central America or the Caribbean.
For good
it's
reason.
It's not the numbers, yeah. 90%+ of the slaves were sent to Brazil and were sent to the Caribbean and were sent to the Middle East and were sent to India and were sent to Madagascar.
I don't know about that last one.
So, you kooks are nuts, but your map's right. And here's my deal. Is a Brazilian guilty that
don't
their
finish that
10
sentence.
Grandfathers before him bought some black slaves at a slave? No.
So this is something that you would learn in school, and I think that there's a fascinating dynamic at play where a bunch of people don't pay attention in class, they never did the assigned readings, and then they insist that their school would never touch some kind of supposedly dangerous material that they encounter on Twitter.
I've heard that a lot.
It's intellectually pathetic, and people who act like that should be mocked, and at least not taken seriously. This map that Alex is clearly mad about is pretty misleading, too, but it misleads by using actual data. For example, Brazil was the destination for about 60-70% of enslaved persons sent over from Africa during this time period that it covers, with only about 6% of the people going to the United States. Yet, mysteriously, by the time of the Civil War, the U.S. enslaved population made up over half of the enslaved population in the Western Hemisphere. Between 1790 and 1860, the enslaved population in the United States went from 697,624 to 3,953,760. The U.S. didn't need to import as many enslaved persons because our system of chattel slavery included having enslaved people reproduce and then enslaving their children. Thus, when you look at numbers that just include importation figures, you miss out on the larger context, which is exactly what Alex wants to do. He wants to eliminate the context and reality of American slavery in order to minimize its impact because he's a flagrant racist. As to the question of whether or not someone in Brazil should be responsible for their ancestor enslaving people, it's the same question as it relates to the United States. You aren't personally responsible for the actions of your ancestors, but you do exist in the context of their actions. The legacy of American slavery involves the theft of billions of hours of labor, and after the abolition of slavery, the intentional effort to keep black people unable to interact with the public market, thereby destroying generations of wealth. All of this has a tremendous impact on the world that we live in today, and it's only one of the variables of our unresolved history as it relates to slavery. To the extent that that exists in Brazil, it's the same problem if it does. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know the most about Brazilian culture, but, you know, to the extent that that exists, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Another important variable that Alex is failing to recognize is that a lot of the places on the map where slaves were being sent were territories being held by imperial powers. For instance, through almost the entire history that map covers, Brazil was a colony of Portugal, and they had a giant interest in the sugarcane exports from Brazil.
Weird.
Many of the large destinations for enslaved persons had a similar dynamic. Cuba was a Spanish colony at the time, St. Dominique was a French colony, and Jamaica was a British colony. All of these places were major sugarcane producers, as well as some other crops like coffee, so the imperial powers came in, enslaved local populations, but then needed more labor, so they imported humans from Africa. This is a far more complicated issue than Alex wants to recognize, because his only interest is in pretending that the history of racist structures in the United States really isn't that bad. He's wrong, and he really needs to stop getting so mad at tweets. He's almost 50 years old. This is sad.
This type of argument and this type of thing is one of those deceptive, lesser of two evil kinds of, like, what I'm trying to say isn't that, oh, we didn't slave.
Mm.
I'm trying to say that they're overestimating the slave we did.
Right.
When in reality, you can't have zero. This is not a conversation that can have one. You can't have a little bit.
Right, and the numbers are irrelevant to the larger,
exactly.
Like, more important conversation.
Totally. To even suggest that this is worth, like, the idea of, like, percentages of total, like it's an economic question.
Yeah.
Like, it's an economic question. You know, that's fucked up.
Focusing on that the way that Alex is at best a distraction.
Yeah. Like, oh, here's the thing about this logistics. Mm-hmm. Wrong. No. Yeah.
So earlier in the episode, we enjoyed Alex attempting a little satire about Dianne Feinstein.
Sure.
And I mentioned that Swift might come back up.
Okay.
And in fact, he does. But I don't think that Alex understands. Satire?
Taylor Swift?
No.
Oh.
Johnny.
Ah.
Johnny Swift. I don't think Alex understands what he was up to.
Okay.
They think they'll collapse things and then we'll line up and kiss their asses. No, we'll eat your ass. And that's why I did that 3 years ago, went viral. I said, so civilization collapses and my kids are starving, I'll haul your ass up by a chain and eat your ass. And I was doing an analogy.
Oh my God.
The Modest Proposal, the famous satire. Millions of Irish were dying. There was only one British lord that was Irish.
Oh, my God.
And the House of Lords was saying, well, let's just kill all the Irish. Screw them. Let's not help them in the potato famine. And so this British lord wrote a op-ed under a pseudonym.
I like it.
Saying, yeah, the Irish should quit bitching. We should just tell them to fatten up their babies and sell them to us and eat them. And the British weren't used to satire. There was a debate.
I'm sorry?
Like, yeah, maybe we should. A minority of people. Maybe we should just eat the Irish. You think you're safe when you eat people's kids? Think that's a world you want to live in?
What?
I mean, seriously, folks. There's no bottom to this when you go along with it. It's insane.
Wait. Are we now?
And I've warned the left. It won't be Alex Jones you got to worry about when stuff goes south, which it already is.
Sure.
It'll be your neighbors. And the Pentagon's own reports admit within 10 days, anyone that doesn't commit suicide in a collapse with no food or water starts murdering. Within 15, the majority become cannibals.
So why are they killing for those 5 days in between?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good question.
Yeah. So the British, not accustomed to satire.
That's one of the weirder things I think I've ever heard in my entire life. See, the British, not used to satire.
What about
old
Billy Shakespeare? Get a little bit of satire.
Nah, he didn't understand any of it.
What about the other things that Jonathan Swift had written previously?
What was that? I think he's a figment of Alex's imagination.
Also, he wasn't a member of the House of Lords.
I swear to you, I don't understand any of what Alex was trying to say there.
He's grasping at straws, trying to intellectualize the idea that he said he would eat his neighbors.
Right, but I mean, is he bringing that back up to like play the hits? You know, like,
here's what I think.
Let me give him another taste to eat your ass.
Here's what I think.
Yeah.
I think he's desperate.
He was thinking that too.
I think he's a little desperate to kill time and for attention, and he wants to do this again.
Right.
And so he does.
Okay.
The power goes off within a month. Mass cannibalism. Now, in that world, I've been honest with my children and my family. Some guys show up to rob my house. I'll be waiting for them in the bushes. I
How
wipe
long
them
are
out.
You in the
we don't
bushes
got any food.
For?
I'm going to butcher them. I'm going to eat you. My family's not going to, I will eat human flesh. I will cut your ass up. I'll eat you. I'll cook you on a spit. I don't want to, but before you kill me, I'm going to feast on your flesh. You're the ones brought us here. You're the ones took us to this point. I'm made to dominate.
Sure.
You're not. And I'm talking to the left. You're a bunch of candy asses.
Okay.
I mean, I guess domination is bad.
You want to eat bugs. So I'll tell you again, the world you're leading us to is cannibalism. And in that world, I'm the gorilla.
He's the gorilla.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Right.
All right. If your stock is eating bugs, you're eating bugs too.
Mm. Oh, so if I survive on bugs and Alex eats me.
Yeah. He's a bug eater.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm saying.
This is how Klaus Schwab
this
wins.
This is how he wins. We're all going to eat the bugs. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's a couple dynamics at play here. The first is that I think Alex really misses how excited and how viral that eat your ass thing went.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to do this again.
Yeah.
But then also, there's another through line through it that I can't tell if he's just trying to be like, how can I say this differently?
Right.
But he seems to really want you to know he's okay with eating people.
I think he's trying to recapture some of that viral magic for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think he understands you can only reveal you'll eat people one time. You
right,
know?
Right.
After that, it's in the canon.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you eat people. We get it. Get
out
of
here. He's like a kid who did something kind of, transgressive for attention.
Yeah.
And then is like, hey, you want to see me do that again? You want to see me do that again?
Yeah, totally.
You want to see me do that again?
No, you already ate the bugs, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is a little bit like an almost inverse, like that old joke. Oh, I've worked at a gravedigger for 30 years. Do they call me Gravedigger Mike? No. You fuck a monkey one time and you're monkey fucker Mike. And it is like, but that's just, you can only do that once. After that, nobody's like surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be like, oh, I fucked another monkey. Everybody's like, yeah, you're the monkey fucker guy.
But
get out of here.
But see, this is where Alex is trying to now escalate.
Right. Oh, he's going to escalate.
Yeah.
He's going to fuck two monkeys.
No. Well, metaphorically. So I believe what I hear in this next clip is that Alex is going to try to create a cannibal community for himself to live after the collapse.
Okay.
I'm the lion. I'm the tiger. I'm the alpha male. I'm the killer whale. I'm the apex predator. I will destroy you. And while we're getting our farming set up and our emergency energy system set up, we'll have a meeting. Thousands of people in front of me. I'll say, we don't want to eat people, but they put us in this position. Before we get the protein we need, we're going to have to resort to cannibalism. Are you ready? And they're going to literally tell me, yes, Jones, we're ready to eat man flesh. And I'll say, let's do it.
Man flesh.
You don't have the will to kill people and eat them. I do.
Wow. Weird flex.
Yeah.
I would say I do not have the will to kill and eat people, and I'm comfortable with that.
I believe he is. I think he's trying to start the Uruk-hai. How about this meeting? How about this is the meeting?
Quite a meeting.
How can we farm faster?
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have any better ideas than let's go eat man flesh?
Because right.
Alex, you got to stay back in that corner.
What other sources of protein are available to us than man flesh? Alex, a little too eager to eat people, I think.
If I'm in any meeting where man flesh is evoked, I'm out.
Right.
I'm out.
Right.
I'll go somewhere else.
The risk you run with leaving is that they might end up eating you at some
point.
I'll take that risk.
I'm not in that meeting and then I'm turning around and then walking away. I am backing out slowly. My eyes are on you the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Still, the risk is lower than staying there.
Right. Right. Oh, you're going to get eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because maybe a human hunting party goes bad.
Yeah.
They come back and they're like, well, Jordan, gonna have to eat you.
The first person you eat is the guy who's like, maybe let's not eat people.
Right.
You gotta eat that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna be annoying the whole time.
Right.
You're gonna be eating that.
Sort of judge you for eating a human steak.
Yeah, you're gonna be eating the guy and he's like, hey, we shouldn't do that.
Right.
You know, get that guy out of here.
But here's the thing that you need to recognize. The globalists are bringing us into the cannibalism state.
Okay.
And when we get there.
All right.
Jordan, you're laughing.
I'm sorry.
When we get to that point,
right,
your neighbor is going to try and eat you.
Okay, so we're in zero-sum game,
yes,
for sure.
It's
okay.
Eat or be eaten.
Okay.
Humans, your neighbor will become a piranha-like demon after 10 days of no food. But a piranha-like demon will just run up to your camp trying to eat you with a machete in their hand. We're just sitting there waiting for them. Pop, pop, pop. All right, haul them up. Let's eat them. I don't want to go to that economy, but in that economy, I will eat you. Maybe that gets to you at some genetic level. Because the people playing predator aren't the predators. I'm the predator. My listeners are the predators. They actually care. They
I'm
don't want to do this.
Wait.
But if you put us in that wheelhouse, I'll eat you.
I'll eat you. Generally, I do think Alex is a predator, but describing him as an apex predator is silly.
Oh, no.
I am very out of shape, and I think I could outrun him pretty easily.
Yeah. Not difficult. No.
I guess if you have a gun, anybody can be considered an apex predator.
I feel like he can only move side to side like a crab. You know, he doesn't have the forward momentum anymore.
Sure. And he can't turn his head to the side. His neck's too thick.
Yeah. I think one of the ironies ultimately about this, I find, is that the people we most associate with fasting or not eating for 10 days are the most peaceful people that can be.
But
right?
Alex has talked about fasting and stuff. You know,
sure,
it is a thing that is brought up in Christian circles
right,
a bit.
Right, but I mean, we're talking about hunger strikes. We're talking about monks. We're talking about all this stuff. And yet, at the same time, his argument is that if you don't eat for 10 days, you will try and eat a human.
Well, 10 days in, Gandhi took some man flesh.
Let me question it. Let me riddle you this. Okay.
Sure.
Are they secretly sneaking man flesh?
It could be.
All those Buddhist monks.
Yeah.
All those hunger strikers.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaking in man flesh after 10 days.
That's why they have to go to these temples that are so, secluded.
Sure.
Otherwise, the man flesh supply would be noticed.
No, totally. Yeah. And you can't go back. That's the other thing.
Right.
Once you taste man flesh.
Yep. That's why you have to take the oath.
Yes. That's right. I forgot the...
So, yep. Vow of silence. Yep, can't talk
yep,
about
yep,
this.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So, here's the thing. You're killing all these people.
Sure.
You're eating them.
You would assume you feel a little bit bad.
Alex says he doesn't want to do it, but I don't believe that.
I don't believe that even for a second.
But there's a logistical issue.
Right.
And that is, what are you going to do with all the blood?
I'll haul you up my chain.
Right.
But I don't want to make a soup out of your blood. You get sick if you just drink blood straight up. Just boil it. Add some potatoes.
What?
But before my children die, I'll cook you.
Would you feed yourself to your
You really want me to cook you? You really looking for daddy to stand up? Keep looking for the alpha male. Keep looking for somebody to show you how that's done. I'll show you. That's all that's going to be going around when the food's cut off. The energy's cut off. It's going to be people.
Sure.
The pigeons, the rats, we'll try to eat them first. Squirrels,
they're too quick.
They'll be gone in a couple weeks. And then guess who's on the menu? You.
You. You're on the menu. This is just so dumb. Like, one of the things that's really interesting to me, though, is that he doesn't sound drunk.
No.
Like his normal drunk thing. This is just desperate.
Yeah.
It's pathetically, intentionally designed to try and get people to post about it.
Yep.
And for what it's worth, I'm fairly glad that I didn't see people taking the bait. So that's good.
Yeah.
But here's the dynamic that I think is important to understand. Alex does stuff like this in order to bait attention and go viral with people making fun of him.
Yeah.
Now, on the same show, he did this ridiculous xenophobic racist pageant. And that's the content that he wants people to accidentally find by way of advertising it through this, I'm going to drink your blood in a stew
yep.
kind of shit. There is an intentionality to it.
Yeah.
There is he's like a really fucked up dude, and he says really fucked up things, but there is definitely, maybe it's even kind of subconscious, but there's an understanding, though, of like these ways to hijack attention. And that's clearly what this is an attempt at.
Yeah. No, it is. It is so much that Douglas Adams, you know, Serious Cybernetics Corps. The superficial flaws are purposefully put there to distract from the fundamental flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no.
And yeah. In the same way, I believe the Sirius Cybernetic Corporation will be first against the wall when the revolution comes.
So we have one last clip here.
Uh-huh.
Now, he's talking about his cannibal stuff.
Sure.
Make a blood stew, potatoes.
That's unreal.
I hate to bring up the Real World Road Rules Challenge again.
Uh-huh.
But I find their version of eating challenges really grotesque compared to like things you see on Survivor or whatever. And part of it is sometimes they don't say what the things are that they're eating.
Oh, no.
Which is very upsetting.
It's a mass.
But then frequently they'll have them chug like a pint of blood.
Eek.
And that to me, I mean, I'm the guy who has routinely said that a challenge should be give me a pint of or a, you know, a bit of your blood.
Sure.
And I stand by that.
Of course.
But I don't like them drinking out of a giant stein of blood.
Yeah.
That's gross.
You know, whiskey has its own glass.
Right.
You know, beer has its own. A martini has its own glass. Blood does not fit in any of those glasses.
Should they have a novelty syringe or something like that? Like a giant syringe?
Yeah, that you like have to drip in. That'd be fun.
I mean, look, showmanship, TJ.
That's what you got to do.
So we have this last call clip where Alex goes to calls from his cannibalism rant.
Okay.
Plane crashes in the Andes, 100 on board, half of them down the crash. First week or so, nobody eats the people. They're like, this is immoral. But as soon as their kids start starving to death, they go, all right, let's cook them. And the globalists want to put us in that position. Let's not do that. Let's bypass that. Let's say
start cooking
no
them now.
But you got to do it now.
Wait, which?
Who's up next here? I'm taking calls where they're received.
Oh,
who's
my
up
God.
Next? Jordan, Michigan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm thinking of recipes.
Fair enough.
I think that is about the funniest thing that he's got.
Mm.
That little offhanded, I'm thinking of recipes, that references the thing that he was talking about earlier. Quick enough. It is off the cuff. Yeah, I'll give him that for entry-level joke style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indicates the lack of seriousness that any of this
absolutely
involves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we come to the end of this, and I mean, I just, you know, you go in, you're looking for this Russell Brand episode, you accidentally stumble across Alex actually seeming to try in a weird way.
Yeah.
Throwing a bunch of, as you described, shotgun spaghetti around about this elaborate conspiracy in order to make undocumented immigrants into the police and military.
Right.
Just a flood of racism.
Oh, goddamn.
And then this desperate attention grab attempt. It's an interesting episode. You know, like, I don't know if it's because we've been gone and I've been a little bit out of the loop of the workflow, but I find this episode is one of the more interesting ones that I've seen in a long time.
I tend to agree with you. I listen to that barrage of racism and I wonder how we've ever even gotten to this point. You know, like, this is not something that you wake up one day and you're like, now, here's my racist globalist conspiracy that includes just about everybody that's non-white and how much I hate all of them.
Yeah.
And if I could, I would have gotten to women, too.
And you all should be very, very scared.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Shamefully rehash a bit you did 3 years ago that you shouldn't remember that clearly.
It was a good bit.
It was a good bit.
I think that the remembering that clearly is indicative of how much traffic it drove.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my point whenever I say you shouldn't remember that clearly. He's bringing it up because it drove so much traffic.
Yes.
And he's very aware of that. Mm. To try and redo it is just sad.
Yeah. And also, this was right after the news broke that he had lost a bunch of money.
Weird.
And that doesn't come up. I don't know. I don't want this to be like a portent of things to come.
Sure.
Like I don't necessarily want him to do interesting shows every day.
No.
That's overwhelming.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate it every now and again. And it's a nice welcome back.
I respect your willingness to get excited for a man only putting in a small amount of effort.
Well, when you're 6-7 years deep
because,
and somebody has put in no effort,
I'll tell you this.
It's pretty impressive.
Because I have been feeling like we're on the 9th day of you not having anything to eat, and I've been looking at you like smack your lips. No. Oh, I'm yeah. If Alex hadn't have tried at least a little bit, I think I would have been eaten.
Oh.
Yeah. Dangerous.
Well, I will tell you this.
Yeah.
If I do eat you,
sure.
You will be well seasoned.
Okay. I don't trust you. I don't think you're... Listen.
A lot of hot peppers.
I will leave instructions on how best to cook me.
Okay.
I feel like I could cook me better than you.
Out of respect, you are a better cook.
That's my final words. I can cook me better than you.
You are a better cook. I will give you that.
Sure.
I feel like cooking a human would be harder than frozen pizza, so I'm fucked.
I would very quickly stop being the better cook than you in this scenario.
But not if you left really detailed instructions.
That's a good point.
And because we're such good friends and I respect you, I would follow your instructions.
Oh, yeah. Well, then that means that I would be able to cook me better than you in perpetuity forever and ever and ever. And that would be a fitting tribute,
and
I think.
If the tables are turned and you're thinking about eating me, yeah. I would just leave a note pinned to my shirt that says, not good eating.
I'm too picky. I wouldn't eat a person.
Yeah, me neither.
I think I would maybe...
I don't think I'd even eat duck.
I think I might try a person.
Whoa.
Just to get it out of the way.
See, that's the problem, though. If you do, you can't undo that.
You can't undo eating. I can't be like, hey, listen, I don't want a whole thing.
Right.
I don't want your whole dish. I just want a taste, you know? You can't do that with human.
Mm-mm.
With man flesh.
With man flesh, it's a bridge that cannot be recrossed.
Yep, you just can't.
And Alex is excited to cross that bridge.
I
wouldn't be surprised if he's already eaten somebody.
I would be surprised if he's already eaten somebody.
He's a multimillionaire.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's had a taste.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, dangerous.
We'll be back. Probably with some live episodes.
With these and more conversations.
Yeah. But until the next time we see you... Wave website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. Boop, 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 boop. Chomp, 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 chomp. That's me eating man flesh. Chomp, 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 chomp.
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.